You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Jesse, you asked me if I was in the meth business or the money business. Neither. I'm in the empire business.
Hey guys, Pete here. Welcome to Growth Decay Transformation, the Breaking Bad Rewatch podcast. My co-host Courtney can't be here today, but I am joined by a couple of guests you might know. The guys from Bald Move. You want to say hello?
Hey.
Hello.
I'm Aaron. Nice to meet y'all.
I'm Jim.
Yeah, and it's nice to have you guys here today to talk, and we're going to get into what we think the legacy of Breaking Bad is, or how we feel about the show now, how we first came into contact with it, like how it got into our lives, and where it is 15 years after it first premiered. So I thought that in order to sort of get the ball rolling here, I was just going to ask you guys, what is your Breaking Bad origin story? Courtney and I have discussed this on some of the episodes that we've done so far. And I'm just curious, like, how did you first discover the show? Where did you hear about it? And did you watch it weekly? Like, when did you get into that? Because personally, I didn't find out about it until it had already been out. So, like, I binged the first two seasons pretty much the first time I watched it. And, you know, the weekly watch was such a big thing later on in the series. I'm just curious as how you got into the show.
I think so this is tough to remember because it was so long ago, but I think I started watching this show in season two, and I couldn't tell you why I started watching it. It was probably just getting some word of mouth about how good it was.
Yeah.
And honestly, there wasn't a lot of TV on at the time that was amazing. Like, you think about that today and you're like, how could that be? But that was the case back then.
Yeah, it's really hard to remember how different it was at that point in time.
Completely different. This was before Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. So season two of Breaking Bad, I think I started watching it and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Because I went back and I watched season one as well, obviously. Season three was about to start, and I think I told you, Aaron, about it, and you started watching it.
Oh, see, no, I thought I told you, but I definitely have a different origin.
This is
going to
be apocryphal.
Interesting. Yeah, right. Interesting. A little
this
bit.
This is
of,
the thing. It's been so long.
Yeah, a little bit.
This is such an mm-hmm. origin story for, like, kind of Bald Move proper, because yeah. I was a big fan of Bill Simmons, and I wasn't a big fan of TV. I used to watch Star Trek and X-Files. I'd watched like the first two seasons of Lost and famously got sick of it by the end of this. I'm like, this is X-Files over again. I didn't used to watch a lot of TV. I was more of a movie guy. But I was a big fan of Bill Simmons' BS Report podcast. And he had, you know, he mostly talked sports, but occasionally he'd have pop culture people on. And a guy I'd never heard of called Alan Sepinwall got on and was interviewed by Bill. And I'm like, man, this guy sounds like he's smart. And he's talking about this, you know, television that sounds really cool. And Bill, you know, they're talking about Sopranos and I don't know, a bunch of other different stuff that I'd never seen. And Bill asked him, like, what he's excited about. And he says, there's this show called Breaking Bad that's really easy to catch up on because it's only like six episodes. But it's about this teacher who gets cancer and he doesn't have good insurance. So he has to make meth, a chemistry teacher, high school chemistry, he has to make meth to pay his medical bills. And I'm like, that sounds really awesome. And I can't remember if I had to actually get the Blu-rays or if Netflix had their shit together enough for me to just go and watch it online. But I watched the first season and I caught up in time for season two. And I watched season two kind of live, you know, week by week with everybody else. And then did we start watching it together in season three?
I was gonna say that maybe you did, because you obviously you remember like where you heard about it, and I don't. So yeah, you must have told me about it. And then yeah, we definitely watched season three together, and it was weird too, because we were considering a podcast at the time. We already had a podcast, but we were considering doing a podcast for The Walking Dead right before this came out, but we missed our deadline on that.
Yeah,
to get that first episode out before the season started. I think that was on that would have been season one. And then so we decided, okay, what's the next show that we're super excited about? Well, it's Breaking Bad. Let's go ahead and start it then. And we hit that deadline. So Breaking Good was actually our first TV podcast.
And it's what really launched what Bald Move is constituted as today. Because before it was just two dudes talking about video games and role play, and like just, you know, standard two nerd podcast. Nerd, and we were struggling to find like 500 people to listen to a week. And when we did the first episode of Breaking Bad, I remember like it's yesterday, going into work in the morning and looking at the stats page. We had 5,000 downloads the first night. And I was like, ah, you know, TV is
totally
where it's at.
Pivoted our entire company around it, right? Like,
yeah,
it wasn't
yeah.
a company then, but it was like our hobby at the time. We completely pivoted. We were like, we did a few more of the show that we were still doing.
We were like a caravan that just followed AMC content. We did Breaking Bad, which led into Mad Men, which led into Walking Dead, which we're already primed to do. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun era.
I had a similar experience with, but it was during Game of Thrones. You know, I was already playing around with YouTube a bit, and just was, you know, I was really starting to get into Game of Thrones and reading the books and stuff. And I made a video, and I was just like, wait, this is a totally different experience than everything else I've tried as far as YouTube. I mean, it was just like, wow, this is something I'm gonna definitely have to think about taking seriously. As far as TV itself is concerned, though, I mean, Breaking Bad for me, it's the origin story is that it's the show that really made me start to pay attention to it. You know, I'm curious, Aaron, you said that you watched season two live. Do you remember like people talking about it? Was there much conversation? Because as far as I know, it went on Netflix after three seasons. Like the first when it was first on Netflix, you could binge all three. And the first time I remember people talking about it was season four. And that was even super surprising, because when I found that, I was just like, I thought I was just the only person watching it, really.
As far as an online discussion, because I hadn't discovered Reddit at that point, I don't think.
Right.
But I had found Alan Sepinwall, who had just started a blog where he was like recapping Mad Men and Sopranos and all this stuff. So I started following his blog recaps. And that's how I like to hit the comment section underneath those blogs. That's like how I got into television, kind of, I guess, modern television criticism, is through his blog. And I followed his, he had a podcast that came out just a couple years later with Dan Feinberg, the Firewall and Iceberg podcast. And that's kind of like that kind of like really got me into what later became known as the golden age of television.
Yeah.
Right. And that was my gateway.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a show that it's important for everyone involved here, as far as like why we're having this conversation today. So I think that's
right.
Pretty interesting, and that's one of the reasons why whenever you guys offered, you know, for me to start making some podcasts and doing that with Bald Move or whatever, that it kind of came to mind. It was just sort of like I wanted to do something maybe that was already complete and that I already had a lot of feelings about, you know what I mean? Just to to work through the whole process of getting started or whatever. So I went and I searched online. I was like, let's see how many of these things exist or whatever. And your podcast actually comes up, because you like you said, you started covering it later. So you went back and you went back and rewatched the first few seasons to make a complete watch along thing. So that's pretty cool. And
yeah, we tried to do it both from the non spoiler perspective, but also the spoiler perspective with a spoiler section at the end.
Yeah.
That was tough, you know, because boy, you want to talk about all the things. Because when you go back to the beginning of the show, there's so much you notice that you just didn't pick up on the first time around, if you were doing a weekly podcast about it.
Yeah. And that's why we know that would probably be, there would be some appeal for people who want to just start getting into the show right now as somebody else is, you know, as we're covering it. But like, you guys already have that. We can redirect people in that direction. So we just said we're going to forget about all that and just talk about the whole thing, because, you know, I mean, it's a part of television at this point. You know what I mean? If you haven't watched it, that's fine, but you can't really, you know, expect
us
all to.
It's like Darth Vader's Luke's father. You know, it's like, come on. If you care about television, you've already seen this, and if not, then you don't care about television, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
or you're just too young. You just haven't seen enough.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah.
Your catalog. You're still building your catalog, right?
Yeah.
Because this is the 15-year anniversary coming up, right?
Yeah. Just the pilot. It was last month. It was 15 years. So.
Oh, wow. 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 Came out in the dead of winter.
Yeah. Yeah. They actually launched it, which is something I didn't have any idea about until I started doing this podcast and reading about it. But they launched it to be after the NFC Championship game, which is like the, you know, the second biggest televised sporting event of the year.
Yeah.
And they were expecting this, you know, this big crossover of people who would be done with the game and looking for something to watch. And it was the first time in like decades that the game went into overtime or something like that. You know what I mean? So their whole launch of like, you got to watch it live and everyone's already on TV anyway, so just change the channel. It all kind of backfired there.
Wow.
If you think about it now, you know, as it's complete, what would you say the legacy of Breaking Bad is in a sentence or two? You know, we'll elaborate on it, but just if you had to say it in a succinct little soundbite, what would you say the legacy of Breaking Bad is?
I think it was let's put it in Breaking Bad terms. I think it was a catalyst for change in television. And it wasn't solely on the back of Breaking Bad, but this hit at the perfect time when binge watching became a thing with Netflix. Mm-hmm. It kind of hit right in that sweet spot. And in my opinion, it changed the way that people thought about TV. Serious money wasn't being put into television. You didn't have a lot of companies that saw television as something prestigious. You couldn't get big name actors over in television because everybody took it less seriously. Bryan Cranston's performance and Breaking Bad as a whole, I think, changed that.
Yeah, and like obviously television was heading in this kind of prestige, you know, non-episodic, more episodic, less serialized. No, it's more serialized, less episodic direction. You had Oz started, you know, we were already in the height of Sopranos. The Wire had already been on, but like, Breaking Bad, I think, had this unique tone where it was almost a dark comedy, especially in the early seasons, and had this slick produced feel and effortless touch at handling these high pressure, big kind of blockbuster action sequences that I don't think there's anything that's kind of come before it, and not very many shows since have been able to maintain that kind of balance. It was definitely, I don't know if it was a revolution, because I'd have to go back to the Oz and Sopranos and things like, you could even argue like NYPD Blue, Homicide, Life, and there's a lot of like forerunners that brought us into the golden age of television, but like, I think Breaking Bad definitely, for its cinematography and its cinematic feel, stands above its contemporary peers. And you can see the influence it's had on people since.
One of the things that I find interesting about the show, when you look at it as a whole, is that I think what it did better than any other show is, at least contemporary, you know, at that time, it was the way that it could put together those stories or those sequences of, you know, multiple episodes where it would just keep ratcheting up that tension. You know, it was all tied up into what was going on. And you know, you could be, you would be like, okay, that's insane. And then the next week, they would surprise you again with like taking it to the next thing. Like it just would build up in a way that other shows couldn't do, because you mentioned it a little while ago, you know, they were basically self-contained episodes. You know, the characters were essentially in the same place at the end. And this show, the reason why that was, you know, there's lots of reasons, but one of the reasons why that was is because if you missed an episode, like you would be lost. You know what I mean? Like this is something that you have to watch from week to week, and you have to pay attention to what's happening. You know, so it's interesting how it was never designed as a binge show, but how it was so perfectly suited for that when that came into existence.
Yeah, Netflix getting in season three is the best thing that ever happened, because you see there's pretty steady, like it's a pretty flat 1 million people watching season one and season two. Season three is a little bit more, but that show has exponential growth in its final two seasons. It's because people binged it, got addicted to it. And this is like this, that is the completely revolutionary phenomenon that went around, not just Breaking Bad, but I think a lot of the AMC shows, is this bingeability. That like, you know, normally the most popular show would ever be is in its first season. And then it would kind of tail off because like the barrier to entry, like if you're going into season three of a show that's been on network television, historically, there's no way to like watch past episodes except for reruns. It's not like you go to, you know, Netflix and just, you know, catch up. Right. So like as a show got older and older and people stopped watching it and there's no new fans, it just naturally tail off. Like the golden age of television and the binge era inverted that, where shows could start off small and gain word of mouth audience and just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that is like that's just incredible. There's very few shows that do that. Even now, like it's because there's so much competition, but there is this one era where not everybody and their brother was making this type of content. And you could, like, I mean, I felt there's an era where if you watched HBO on Sunday and AMC, you essentially had everything worth watching on television. And that's no longer the case, which I don't know if it's a bad thing, but it's definitely not the same as it used to be.
Yeah, and there's also technology-wise, you know, this was where, around this exact same time where you would have a widescreen TV in your house, you know, like a flat screen or whatever. Whereas, you know, there were shows before this that certainly had that cinematic flair to them, but you didn't really engage with them in that way. You know, this was, you know, the fact that he wanted to do that, and I think that was influenced a lot by his experience on X-Files, Vince Gilligan. I think that there's a difference, you know, at the X-Files looked good, but you watched it on crappy little TVs. Breaking Bad looked amazing and you could see it in all its glory because you had, you know, things had changed in that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to Growth, Decay, Transformation. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Let's get cooking. We're back with more Growth Decay Transformation.
Like we said at the very beginning here, you know, it's hard to remember whenever the norm wasn't for a show to take us through a character and follow him. And it seems like, you know, it seems so obvious that that's what you would do if you wanted to create great TV, because in our landscape here where we have access and we can watch whenever we want and we can watch from beginning to end without having to go out and buy the DVD or, you know, get someone to record the marathon on VHS or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the kind of TV now that I just sort of expect. You know, I want to see like, because originally, you know, and you mentioned how we only really the first season was the big season. That's because a lot of shows were pitched on their premise of this is a thing. And if you had a novel idea and then you could put that into a formula or a structure, then all the other networks were just going to copy it anyways. And you'd have multiple versions of this same thing. So, you know, the interest would burn out pretty quickly. But when you think about Breaking Bad, you're watching a guy, you know, we can get into what's actually going on with him or whatever. But I mean, you're watching him change. He starts out one way and he goes somewhere else. And as many of its contemporary shows, I mean, it seems like this is one where Vince Gilligan went in knowing that he wanted to get him from point A to point B. Maybe he didn't have that tracked out at all or what the ending might be, but that he didn't want to hang around and try to make this last forever. You know, he beats the cancer in season four and they read this, you know, they make the show have a different idea. I mean, he had this thing that he was doing as something that would have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And he could really get in and make the middle the place where we started to get invested in what's going on with the characters.
And, yeah. And I think you're hitting on, like, the thing for me that makes Breaking Bad stand out in that era is that it was character-driven. And there were, like, a handful of shows that were that way then, but I think of other shows that I was way into, like Lost. Lost is a very plot-driven show. It has character moments, big character moments, but that is not the driving force of the show. Driving force of Breaking Bad is its characters. None of this stuff happens to the characters. It happens because of them.
Yeah.
And that's super attractive.
Yeah, and that's another thing about the shows, you know, tailing off and getting weaker. It's not just that, you know, there's the barrier to entry. It's also just that when you have shows that are procedural, there's only so many times you can run those characters through the four, you know, five basic conflicts, you know, man versus man versus nature, you know, yeah. Boy meets girl, boy loses girl. There's only so many iterations you can do that with the crew of the Enterprise before people like, you know what, I've seen this and I'm done. Like the idea that you can have something that just builds and gets the ideas get better and better and stronger and not weaker and weaker and more diluted and more desperate and more sweeps weak, happy. And that was, you know, another one of the big revolutions of this golden age. That's all, you know, it's such a minor change, like tell stories that span episodes and seasons rather than are self-contained. So it doesn't matter if you miss a cup, it matters if you miss it. And that's the whole point. Like, yeah.
And it, you know, like I said, in our landscape, that seems like a no-brainer. But I mean, it's really a difficult premise to sell at when Breaking Bad's coming out, because, you know, if it landed at HBO at that time had you didn't stream, but you had on demand. You know, you could go back and you could watch The Wire or one of those series from beginning to end whenever you wanted to, but AMC, there was no, you know, if you missed it, you missed it until you know, you found it a different way. So it really is kind of a gamble to start out at that time that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess, you know, it did pay off. We're here talking about it. It influences most of the shows that we cover, you know, whenever we're not talking about it. They're all sort of on that same formula now in one way or another. It obviously won a lot of awards. I think, you know, in retrospect, it seems like that if Bryan Cranston hadn't won the awards in the first couple of seasons, you really wonder how it would be, because that's, I think, you know, you think of it as being universally kind of critically acclaimed. I don't think that it was that. The first season, I don't think there were that many critics talking that highly about it.
They were, but everyone was saying kind of like when they got out of, you know, Denis Villeneuve's Dune, like, okay, because it was a short striking season, it was a half a story and it felt as such. They're like, well, okay, well, this is, you know, interesting 6-7 episodes. I forget, it was 6 or 8 episodes. Is it 6, right, in the first season?
7. And it was supposed to be 9, and they had to cut it to 7.
So there's like, let's see, you know, if they're able to stick the landing. And like, it's interesting because like that writer's strike might be the best thing to ever happen to Breaking Bad, because it let Jesse live. Like, Jesse was supposed to die at the end of season 1.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to tell that story. And there's such a huge reaction, and the writers have taken such a shine. They're like, let's not kill this kid. Let's bring him in main cast. And I wonder what Breaking Bad looks like if Jesse dies at the end of season 1.
Yeah.
It's hard to even think about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so much of the stuff that I love happens around Jesse. Like,
it almost like you would have to
lose all the Jane stuff.
You'd have to be a replacement. Jesse. You'd have to recreate the character of Jesse to make Breaking Bad work without Jesse. It's like he's that foundational. Because, yeah, the whole how the hell do you have a storyline like Jane? Or Jesse's, you know, beating addiction and becoming even a bigger monster. And then his, you know, he's the foil to
you'd have to
Walt
either recreate
end.
It. Yeah, you'd have to either recreate it or do it all with Walt. And then that runs into the territory of like the desperate stuff you were talking about earlier. Right. Mm. Where everything is happening to Walt. So like, what can he put his family through next? You know?
Yeah.
But with Jesse, you get to split a little bit of it off. And yeah, he's vital to that series, in my opinion.
I talked about this on another episode that we recorded recently. So I don't want to retell the whole thing that I said there. But the ending that was planned whenever they thought they were doing 9 episodes was it's hard to imagine. Like, they might have got to the same place in the very end, but it's hard to imagine how much. Like, how different it would have to be to get there, you mm-hmm. know? So I think you're right. That could have been, I mean, I also kind of trust the writers and think that they would have figured out something else that was also good. But at the same time, it's something that you can't, it had a big effect on how things played out.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd forever be different if it was.
Yeah. And Jim, you said earlier, you were talking about how it was based on the characters, you know, it's character driven, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I, one of the things that popped up to me in this rewatch and sort of watching it a little bit closer and stuff is the way that it's sort of like, the first season, at least the ones we've looked at so far, I mean, they're from Walter's point of view in a way that's a little bit different than how I thought about the first time I watched it. You know, some of the things that seem a little I think the pilot is basically perfect when it comes to introducing us to the character of Walter. You know, I don't think you could do much better of a job of that. One thing like that seems a little bit weaker whenever I watch that now is that just the way the other characters are, you know, they seem a little bit more cartoony. You know, like, if I think about Hank is always the sticking point for me in that, you know, whenever they had that party, and he's just so over the top. And but when I think about it, like, as this is seeing it, seeing who he is through Walt's point of view, that kind of makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because he's so different from Walt.
Yeah. And, you know, he's the opposite. And so and Walt has feelings about that because, you know, Walt Jr. likes him better. And there's that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's something that's jumping out to me on this at this time through is that the way that they try to not only make it character focused, but to kind of really establish the character's point of view, because like I'm just going through the third episode right now, which is one of my, which is really the time when I got sucked in completely. Like if I'm, you know, if I can remember how it played out, like at first I didn't really know what to do with it. I didn't really know where the show was going because I hadn't had an experience of watching something like that yet. You know, like as like you said, it's funny, and but it's not over the top funny. So is this a comedy? Is this going to be something like where he's going to be have to figure something out every week? Where are they actually going with this? I think in the third episode was that point for me where I was like, okay, like this guy, I'm interested in what's going to happen to this guy now. I want to see how he goes through these different things that they put in front of them, these different obstacles. Do you guys remember when you were first like, you know, okay, this is really great TV? Was that the premise, or did that hit you as you were going through the watch?
Man, I mean, we talk about what a legendary pilot the Breaking Bad pilot is, and I have to say I was hooked from that first 5 minute cold open.
Yeah,
the pants drifting from the air, the RV tear ass, and this guy staggering out in his underwear with a gun doing a confessional to his family as the siren, and it's just like, oh my, that is such a great, I was in from the very beginning, and my faith was rarely shaken. It was tested at some point in the end of season two, but that was a small blip in an otherwise, which I think is a close to perfect television show.
Yeah, I'm with you. The pilot is pretty much perfect. And it's remarkable to me going back to that pilot to see how much of both the things I remember and love about Breaking Bad happen in that first episode, but how much ground it covers.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire premise of the show is basically covered in that first episode, the Mr. Chips to Scarface thing. Mm-hmm. You take a man who is a beaten down high school teacher where his students make fun of him and he feels deep shame about it, to a guy who's now potentially killed a couple people after making meth in the desert with one of his students, former students. It's incredible how much ground that pilot covers.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I understand why you would also say episode 3 in the bags in the river is the moment that got you, because that episode where Walter has to make a choice that will forever change him, that is the recipe of this show, right? The man making choices that you cannot come back from that are ever more egregious.
Yeah, like, man, does all of those early episodes has so, like, you know, the pilot's amazing. The second episode is the bathtub. The third episode is the missing piece of the pie plate, you know. Mm-hmm. The fourth episode's Tuco, right? Like, everything's got this thing that, like, steps, that stands out, and, like, I can't think of any other show where I have such a great handle. Like, if you told me the titles to the random Breaking Bad episodes, I could probably recall the things that happen in that very easily, and I don't have a handle. Maybe it's a side effect of me watching it 3 or 4 times and doing a 2-hour podcast on every episode, but like I don't have a handle on a lot of shows like I do Breaking Bad. Just that stuff, because it was all brand new to me, it was all new experience, and that stuff is just kind of like burned into my retina and brain.
I guess it's not hard to see what they were trying to do whenever you know what's going to happen, you know, like in the when you first watched it the first time live, or however you watch it the first time, when you don't really know what's going to happen, there's a lot of twists and turns, but it's one of those shows that with hindsight, everything is right there for you. And therefore, like, at least for me, in my experience, like that's where it's, you know, that brilliance of just like, oh yeah, okay, now I see why that hit so hard whenever that happened, and being able to say like, okay, now I see why that character did what they did. And I mean, it's for me, at least at that point, it's unique in that way, because obviously I liked a lot of TV before, but I was hitting these things that I just kind of sort of expect from TV shows now for the first time. And that's sort of what happened in episode 3. It was sort of like I had been picking up all this stuff about this guy, and I was starting to really get invested in what was happening, but it didn't really hit me. And it was almost like the writers were anticipating how I was going. It felt like, I should say, that the writers were anticipating how me and other viewers were going to be interacting with this and experiencing it. And that they were playing with that a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't about trying to just completely shock or surprise, but also sort of reward you for paying attention, if that makes
Absolutely,
sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was going to say that, like, you know, listening to the official podcast, because this is also back in the kind of the early ages of the podcast. When we started podcasting, there was only two other, it was the official and the On the Cutting Edge or Behind the Cutting Edge guys that are doing this. And I just, what an amateur operation the official podcast was back in this time too. sure. But like, that was something you clearly got, like, it's one of the first, I remember what a game changer was when the internet came and you could get on, like, as soon as like X-Files was done airing, you get on Usenet and talk to everybody on alt, you know, .tv.xfiles. A game like having to show creators on a podcast talking about all that process and how it feeds into like that they're reading their press and they're reading the message boards and they're like cackling to themselves about what people are going to do when they see, like, that was kind of fun too, you know, that they were intentionally kind of messing with us in a lot of different ways and challenging themselves to continue to raise, like, famously at the end of every season, they had no idea what they're going to do next season. They tried to put themselves in the paint themselves in a writing room corner. And then it was fun for them to try to get themselves out without disturbing the paint the next season. And that's just, I mean, honestly, if a showrunner came today with that philosophy, I'd probably drag them for it. We got to kind of, but we're just going to make it up. See, I'd be like, oh, this isn't going to work. But those guys did, and it felt like the best kind of improv where everything just, with rare exception, just worked. They never got themselves into a place where they couldn't get themselves out of that corner.
And I think that goes back to what Jim was saying about the character focus. If it makes sense, if you think about what the characters would do and then you have them do that, it's always going to make sense, right?
Right. I will say, I think that the moment that really I said, okay, I love this show, is when the bathtub drops through the ceiling in the hallway of Jesse's house. It shocked me so much. I did not expect, like, I thought this would be like a normal show where they would just kind of imply that they dissolve these bodies.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be any gore, right? It'd all be family friendly stuff. But that bathtub drops through that ceiling. And I'm a big zombie fan at the time. I love the genre. I love the gore of it. Uh-huh. And that viscera comes through that ceiling. And I'm like, yes, I am in. I did not think this show was capable of this. I'm hoping it will continue to surprise me. This is amazing.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, those, everything that you both said as far as that, those both, I was a little bit slower, I guess, to get really feel like, but in retrospect, those things were setting me up, you know, all the way, especially the teaser, because as you said, Aaron, I mean, it was just like, what is going on here? Who even is this guy? You know what I mean? In the tidy whiteys, like, who wears tidy whiteys? I mean, come on. Like, what
that, yeah. And that, God, the cover, the DVD cover at season one is just so iconic. You know, him with that shirt and the tidy whiteys and the socks and shoes holding the gun with the pants in the air. It's just, yeah, it sucks you in because, like, it's everything. Like, you know, there's not a lot of TV set in Albuquerque. What a weird little town that is, where it's surrounded by a giant, reservation, and you have, like, all these different cultures and ways of living and like art and landscape coming together. And yeah, like it just didn't look like anything. Like what? Yeah, like what is this? A guy in an RV with a gun and he's being chased by cops. Like how did he get in this situation? It was endlessly. And I was already primed with like, oh, it's a high school chemistry teacher. It's like, but if you asked me how did that first episode start, I would have never guessed. Like you're just, and it felt like, oh, this is going to be the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
They're teasing yeah. where he's going to be at the end of the season. No, this is where he's going to be 45 minutes from now.
Yeah.
And that's when you get to the end and you're like, oh my God, this is the first step. Where is this going to go? And then the body gets to, yeah, it just keeps on building one thing after another.
Yeah. What I love about that is that you don't know what's going on with him. It asks the question of who he is. And he tells us a little bit of that when he's doing the recording. And you're like, okay, that's who he is. And then there's just layers on it, you know, like there's layers in the way that it's all visual, you know, it's primarily visual. And, but it, you know, that last part, he looks like a man that's ready to meet his destiny, right? He's there. We don't know. We hear sirens. He's holding the gun out like he's going to go down in a blaze of glory. And he seems okay with it. Which is like a huge contrast from where he's going to be whenever, like you said, we go back and see him in his, you know, day in the life kind of at school and everything else. So, yeah, I think, you know, right there, it tells you right from the very beginning also, like, this is what it's about, you know, and they do that a little bit more in his speaking to his class, you know, the growth, decay, transformation thing that we, you know, use for the name of our podcast here. But like, you know, you see that this is a guy, he's not going to, like I said, they're not going to cure his cancer in season 4 and then get a whole different idea of what's going on, what this show's about. Like this is a guy who's going to the end of his story mm-hmm. right from the beginning. And, you know, there really wasn't many other shows that you could say started out with that intention. So I think one of the things that has, you know, because in rewatching it, everything that you could say about this show kind of has been said, you know, it's definitely, there's no shortage of people willing to tell you what they think about it. And of course, that's part of, you know, just goes to how effective it is in doing its job. One of the things that, there's a couple of things actually, but one of the things that I'm interested to go back and look at as I'm going through the entire series and sort of looking at everything really closely is this idea of whether Walt was always Heisenberg, you know, that he had this event, it allowed him to embrace this side of himself that he kept hidden, but was always there. And, or, you know, on the other side of, are we just watching this, like, I guess sort of like a nature nurture kind of debate, you know, because I think we all felt a little bit, at least I can't, I won't speak for you. I'll let you tell me, but I felt like I rooted for Walt for too long, you know, like beyond yeah. the point when I should have. And it's a lot of what they're doing in these first few episodes that we're talking about right now, you know, that made that possible. But I think after the series ended, then you sort of said, well, did he change? Did the situation change him into a monster, or was he just always a monster in the first place? And I think, you know, it's become kind of popular. The popular, you know, way that people look at it is that he always was that way. It just, you know, it this is the right situation to let that come out and for him to realize him, you know, who he was. So at the end of the day, what do you guys think about that? I mean, are you familiar with the conversation that I'm talking about as far as the debate, sure. I guess, of like, was Walter always a monster?
Yeah. I mean, it's something we've talked about a lot on our podcast. The thing that always sticks in my mind, and I come down on the side of, yes, he was always like yeah. this. He was essentially a lion stuck in a cage and somebody left the door open one day.
Yeah.
And the lion came out and
Eddie Vedder,
the thing.
He unleashed the lion. God damn it.
Uh-huh. Exactly. The moment that sticks in my head is when he turns down Gretchen and Elliot's offer to pay for his cancer treatment. That, to me, is foundational, a foundational moment for this character. It tells you almost everything you need to know about him, that he is not motivated by, despite what he says, concern for his family and what they're going to do after he's gone. He is motivated by pride.
Yeah.
And I think that tracks pretty cleanly through the rest of the show.
Yeah, since Jim said I think the prevailing opinion, I think that's certainly Vince Gilligan's opinion. I think that's my opinion too. But I have been wondering, especially if you asked me, 10 years ago, as soon as the show ended, what I thought. But I also think it's like part of the lesson to me is that probably any of us could be something like Walter White, some kind of monstrous version of ourselves if we had the right amount of pressures, the right amount of social and society expectations.
Right.
Because, it's kind of a big thing to expect a man from the boomer generation to go to the people that he perceived as screwing him out of what's due and essentially beg with hat in hand to save me and my family. Like, that is the rational thing to do, and certainly one should do that before cooking meth. But, I can also see inside that, that's why you started hearing things when you start talking about The Sopranos, Mad Men, Breaking Bad. Like that, the term toxic masculinity became part of the, It's not that Walt was toxic because he chose to. He was toxic because he was involved. Like, you could go back, maybe Walter White would have been just fine.
The systemic nature of the way things are organized and yeah.
Yeah. Like somebody said, the real villain of Breaking Bad is the U.S. healthcare system. Mm. I mean, that's an interesting point. Because, if Walter White just could get free medical care for his disease that happened to him through no fault of his own, he probably doesn't break bad, right? So it's like, yes, he's probably always got that thing inside of him, but I think we all do. And maybe we wouldn't break bad and murder children and do that kind of shit, but I think we're all capable of pretty heinous shit if we don't guard our own hearts and if we don't try to set up society to be a little kinder and gentler and a little less ruthless. That could happen to anybody, but I don't think Vince Gilligan would agree with me, so I'm probably wrong.
Yeah, it's interesting because, whenever you hear him talk about, and if you hear Bryan Cranston talk about the character, it seems like they started out with the idea that, he was going, that this was a change, that he would become corrupted in the process of making decisions that we thought were reasonable enough. I mean, it's kind of absurd. The whole idea of becoming a meth cook it's a tough sell, really, no matter how you slice it. But I mean, I think we're all willing to, give them some leeway there, considering that it's really, they set it up to where this is the only thing that he's ever really had success with, is his passion and his, mm-hmm. his, intellect as it relates to chemistry. So that's a lot of money he sees on TV there whenever he's watching Hank, and it's something that came along at a moment where he was vulnerable enough to make that bad decision.
Yes. Yeah.
And
he's equipped and desperate enough to take advantage of.
Yeah, I wasn't brave enough to say, but I kind of, you hit the nail on the head that I don't think that if they arrived at the conclusion that Walter was always bad, I don't think that was the intention from the beginning, because name of your podcast, Growth, Decay, Transformation, the thesis statement from the first episode was all about things undergoing change.
Yeah.
And things being exposed to different catalysts that create an unstoppable a transformation. And to me, that doesn't mean that Walter White was always an evil gang, drug lord, right? It says that things happened to him that squeezed him into that shape.
Yeah, he made a bad decision. There was a cascade of events that followed that decision. There was consequences to that he just didn't foresee. I mean, because he was arrogant. He's an arrogant person. He thought, I can go in and nobody's going to get hurt. This is a victimless crime,
Right.
You know, there's
going to make a clean product with no impurities that does exactly what it advertises. And
we won't be violent. The thing is we won't do any of that other stuff that the guys out there on the street do. We'll do it a different way, a better way.
He's got the
a
stringer,
number and
the
then we're done.
You got the stringer bell theory on this thing. And it's like I said, and I don't want people to get misconstrued. It's like I'm not a pro Walter White guy. I think Walter White is a terrible person. And by the end of Breaking Bad, he is not to be pitied by anybody. But I do kind of pity the man in the pilot.
Yeah.
In the situation he's in.
It's a fascinating dissection, right? Like you said, he's relatable in the sense that all of us do have that line. It's probably not cancer, you know, like the line hopefully is way beyond like just something like that. But like, I think that, you know, throw us into an active combat situation in a war or something like that, you know, like
sure.
There's things that would bring out parts of us that we would rather not ever understand, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do wish I had a little more insight into the gray matter situation before the series. That's the one area that I feel is like cloudy, and I feel like I need better insight into to understand Walter better, but we're not going to get that.
What we do know is pretty messed up though, you know?
Yeah, but it's all hints and kind of like
there's
vague
a relationship that went bad things, and a romantic rivalry and a stolen girl. And then that led
Walt
to
felt entitled to Gretchen. And it might be a story of entitlement.
It might
be. Walt just feels like he wants to own something and is entitled to it.
That's something that they have. It's not ever addressed directly in the series, which I'm sure you know after you've gone through it a couple of times. But that is something that they did explain to the actress who plays Gretchen, like what happened in their relationship, and it comes down to Walt feeling inadequate when he goes to visit her family, who is really wealthy. You know, he feels
has money,
insecure about her background, and that makes him weird or whatever. You know, so that's something. I think the biggest question, and I don't know, I think that you're right. That's one of the things that would help us. And I'm kind of glad in a way that they don't spell all that stuff out. The one question that I really think about as far as like, how did he become the teacher? Like how does he actually make that decision? You know what I mean? Because they show, we haven't gotten to it yet in our rewatch, but like we see whenever he's going to buy the house, with the, you know, young, when they're younger, the house they live in now. And at that point, he's like working at a lab, and it's not gray matter anymore. This is a second lab, a different lab, right? So he's still like, oh, we shouldn't buy this starter house. We should just buy something bigger because, you know, it's like he's completely like looking forward to the future and thinking that things are going to be different. And then we see him later in the present timeline, and he just has some point he settled and decided that he wants to teach high school. And I think that's if we knew why that happened, like maybe it gives us a little bit more, but of course we never will, because you know it's done at this point, and they're not going to make a mini-sode or something later on down the line to fill us in on that.
You're listening to Growth, Decay, Transformation. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Let's get cooking. We're back with more Growth Decay Transformation.
The other thing, I guess, then, if we're talking about of things that I'm paying attention to on the rewatch, and I guess just generally reasons why it still is, it makes sense to rewatch it, is the question of the ending. And like, did you know, I would say this is what we've said in my conversation with Courtney, is that when I watched it live, I absolutely loved the finale. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like blown away. It was a thrilling hour of TV. Everyone I talked to, you know, I had friends who were watching. I believe I watched it with some people that episode at that point, and everyone was just like blown away. But then, you know, after the fact, yeah, you start to think about it, I think a little bit, at least I do. And there was a couple of things that like the whole thing with giving the money to the family, that seemed like it was unnecessary, because, you know, we're watching this guy. He gets cancer. He becomes the cancer for everyone around him and destroys everything. And then he does kind of get off easy at the end, because he's always going to die. Like, that's inevitable. That's built into this. So getting to die on his own terms after he saves Jesse and actually getting the money to his family anyways, does that feel like he got off too easy? Does that tarnish the series at all, or what do you guys think?
Well, I, like you said, he's always going to die. I like to think of it from the perspective of everyone around him, the people he's hurt over the course of five seasons. And I like to think about them getting some justice for all of this, of Skyler, of Walt Jr., of Jesse, boy of Jesse getting some justice, because man, he's just absolutely devastated this whole series. And so I guess I don't view it as like him getting off too easy. I view it as the people around him finally getting some bit of justice for all of the crap he's put
I mean, that's
through.
A fair point. And I think it's also, you know, if you think about it, it's really satisfying. I mean, like they went to great lengths to try to tie everything up and resolve everything in a way that is complete, you know, that, you know, obviously we don't know what happens to Jesse and whatever, but it still feels like, you know, the way that everything played out, that it's carefully crafted, you know, but I just wonder sometimes it feels like it's maybe a little too, too wrapped up, a little bit too perfect. I don't know.
I've always maintained that the Breaking Bad is a choose your own finale show. If you want a nice, tidy ending where Walt gets away with everything and it's a truly unjust end, you can stop with Ozymandias and that's the end of Breaking Bad. If you want Walt to suffer and be punished and to be brought low, then the Granite State is the episode where he just lives this miserable existence and gets his just rewards. And if you want the crazy go nuts, awesome fan servicey Badger and Skinny Pea terrorizing Gretchen and Peter with the laser the targeting or the laser pins, you got the Felina, right? So like I think Felina maybe feels like he gets off and gets a too heroic an end, but I don't know, like. He dies, it's foregone conclusion. Yeah. I'm glad that his family doesn't have to suffer any more than what they clearly already are. I'm glad that Jesse got out of that hellish situation that he was in. And yeah. And then I think El Camino movie is a nice little coda to the series, so you can get the further adventures of Jesse. But yeah, I've always thought that that was my opinion when I finished the episode in the moment that they had stuck the landing. That's always something we were worried about. Mm-hmm. And I still think 10 years later, it'd be hard to wrap up, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to wrap up better than what they did.
I will say that final moment with him out in the barn or whatever with the cooking gear, it is almost a moment of like, look how far I've come. I'm reminiscing for a guy who's done terrible things. And I can see where people would be like, he doesn't deserve that warm, comfortable moment at the end. He deserved to die screaming. I get that. But also, I can't feel too bad about it because it is kind of perfect.
Yeah, that's what I think that based on what we were talking about before, about what their intention going in with the character was and sort of how they maybe sort of updated that as the seasons went on based on the things that the places the story took him. You know, I think that it's a bit of a, I don't know. I mean, it seemed like they were telling the story of his fall, and then maybe they realized on some level that there were still a lot of fans out there who wanted to see him win in some way. So they tried to give it a little bit of both, where, you know, like I said, I totally enjoyed watching it. This is completely after the fact, kind of just, you know, breaking it apart and seeing what might have been ideal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess, does it still hold up? I mean, is there anything about it? Is there anything that you think is less relevant now than it was back then? I mean, I think one of the if we're talking about legacy, I think one of the things that you look at, it does dissect this type of character. It does go into, there's reasons why he's, systemic reasons why he's you know, he's got these grievances that he has and things like that. It doesn't ever really get to be, it never really tries to make a statement about any of that stuff. Like, it's not really political in any way, you know. It's pretty objective. This is this guy, watch what happens to him. We're not going to tip this, you know, put our hand on the scale one way or other about how you should feel about it. So, you know, in that way, I think it's pretty timeless, you know. But yeah, do you think this is going to be something that will be, I mean, because eventually it's going to be dated, but when I think about it now, it's still just about as relevant at the moment as it was when it came out. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think it holds up. It's weird because you just never know what's going to, because there's so much content being produced right now. I don't know what's going to, you know, be like the Golden Girls, where it has a second life when another generation discovers its greatness, you know, and everybody, it's like, I don't know if Breaking Bad, like if there are the generation alphas right now, you know, the kids that are in elementary school and junior high and high school right now, when they get out, or is this going to be super relevant? Is this going to be a touchstone? I think it's interesting because I watched for the first time Sopranos last year. And I walked away from that 20-year-old show thinking, oh, my God, this is actually almost more relevant. Like, it feels like all the themes that they were exploring in post-9/11 America were, you know, have continued to, you know, build and grow and manifest. And it that was what that show was all about. So, like, it's the fact it's even more so. Breaking Bad, I think it's interesting. Like, imagine if in the next 10, 20 years, the U.S. ends the war on drugs and gets free, healthcare, you know, socialized healthcare.
I guess that's true. Yeah,
that would take a lot of, you know, like that. There'd be a lot of just like, what the hell? It'd be like watching a Prohibition era gangster show, you know, like how many people go back and watch The Untouchable? Like, we just actually watched the movie The Untouchables. And it's just like, man, that the movie's only 30 years old and it's like starting to get creaky. I don't know. I do. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's going to have staying power just because it is so slick. It does look so. It's crucially in that high def era. If it was standard def, oof, boy, that's another whole barrier to entry. But I kind of think it'll stand a test of time.
It was really that whole period there, that 10 year, that decade, I guess, if we look at it in the rear view. It's kind of hard to imagine what replaces those shows like The Sopranos and The Wire, you mentioned Mad Men. It's kind of hard to imagine when those get replaced as the great shows that you need to go and watch if you want to know what good TV looks like.
Yeah, I think as long as TV like this is continuing to be made, it won't feel so dated. I think I don't know. I think TV is not the thing that's going to date it. It's our society, yes, probably, is the thing that's going
to
date
it. In our normal episodes, like when we get to this part here, this last section, we usually pick a favorite line. Courtney and I, we usually pick a favorite line and favorite shot from the episode. And I thought maybe, and this is like super hard, I understand, you don't have to just stick to one and, you know, we won't hold you to it, I guess, but I thought maybe we could do that for the entire series. So do either one of you guys want to pick out your favorite line from a five season show that had a gazillion of them?
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, one of us should go for best line. One of us should go for best shot first, because there's a high degree of likelihood we might have the same answers.
Uh-huh.
So you want to do, you want, which one?
Can I do the line?
Yeah, you do the line.
It's kind of wrapped up in the whole thing, but this is pretty easy for me. It's stay out of my territory. That is such a pivotal moment. Like they pick a perfect song with the perfect tone. It's a chilling moment, and it's so pivotal for that character. Stay out of my territory. And the way that Cranston, what he puts on that line, it's chilling.
All right. That's where he kind of comes into his own Heisenberg powers. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. I'm glad I had something different. It's the I'm in the empire business.
Yeah.
Because I think that is a badass line in context, but also that has taken on a whole new meaning in the Bald Move community, because you know, when we were doing this as a hobby, but when we decided to go full time, I think we launched with a Kickstarter. It was like, that was kind of its brand, like, we're in the empire business. We still call our, you know, our community updates, as far as like, you know, what's the state of the Bald Move Union, we call that the Empire Business Podcast. It's just got like a really special relationship to being foundational to Bald Move, and that, I think that line is iconic, and it birthed the whole life and genre of content on our network. So I got to give it up for being in the Empire business.
Yeah, and that's actually that's the clip that I picked to open this episode with today too. So that's kind of a
funny. We also when we started doing the Empire Business podcast, do you remember, cuz we didn't used to have a studio, we had green screens behind us. And our backdrop was, I think, the season four promotional material of like Walt standing in front of those pallets of cash in the warehouse.
Him in his yellow Tyvek suit.
He had like stacks of the blue ice on one side and the money on the other. And that was the background of us. You know, we were in the Empire business.
Yeah. And both of those are great, great like touchstone lines for the character, too. Right. I mean, the Empire business line, the reason why I was thinking about it, because we were going to talk about legacy. And then, you know, just that that's where he really kind of says it out loud for the first time. And that's related to what you're talking about. You know, the one you picked, too, Jim, I think, in a way,
that's where he gets back in. Right.
So, yeah, those are both good. I would say it varies all the time. Like I said, I wouldn't hold you to anything that you said here, because it's just, there's so many. But when I thought about this before, I thought about the I did it for me. I liked it. I was good at it. And I was alive, you know, the part where he goes back at the end. And that's sort of the same thing, right? That's like the trifecta there. That's where he finally says that part out loud, you know, like where he accepts who he is. And that's what I like about that, is that out of all those other things we were saying about the ending of the series and everything else, that's the part, it's pretty on the nose. Like they could have done it in a different way. Maybe, you know, that could be a way I could see you could say it. Maybe that it was a little much to just come out and say it, but I think it works perfectly in that. And because I don't know that I would believe it. You know, if they showed us that Walt had that transformation, I don't know that I would believe it unless he actually does say that out loud. You know what I mean? And he says it to Skyler, which is not just saying it to say it, you know, like he knows this is the last time he's going to see her and everything else. So I think that part of it really works, and it really holds up as far as the entire story for Walter White. So you're going to go first on the favorite shot then, Aaron?
Yeah, two words, crawl space.
Yeah.
You can't steal mine. Come on.
I was worried about the Empire business, but I thought there's a high degree, because this was iconic for us. This was this season? Yes, this is season four. So it was right in the height of the podcast.
Episode 11. I remember.
I don't think anything says Breaking Bad quite like that predicament, that like so many storm fronts came together. The half mil he thought he had that was going to get him out, his get out of jail free to vacuum cleaner, and
it's absolutely get out. It's over there. If it's there, it's over. The story of Walter White ends.
Yep. And Skyler gave it to fucking Ted. And it's just, and his, and just Walt just comes unglued. He's laughing. Mm-hmm. He's crying. He says, hysterical man framed by the sad utility closet with the on-demand water heater. And it's just such a greatly, just such a wonderfully composited shot too. The geometric binding of all the different overlapping rectangles and there's such a master of color and palette on that show too. It's all warm sepias and browns and olives and dirt. It's great shot. Yeah. And a show loaded full of great shots.
Yeah. Tons of them. What do you got, Jim?
Oh boy.
Going to double down on crawl space.
I really want to, but I'll throw out another. I love the moment, and it's maybe not for the shot, it's maybe more for the moment, but I love the moment and the shot where Hank realizes that it's been Walt all along. He sits down on the toilet. He picks up this poetry book. I mean, what is Hank doing with a poetry book? Opens it up, sees the WW, sees the GB, makes the connection, and just the way that it all clicks in that moment.
Great facial acting too, right?
Oh,
there.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say enough good about Dean Norris, but yeah, that shot is, for me, iconic.
Yeah. I'm going to go way back to that pilot episode and something we brought up already, and that's the pants flying through the air and the way that like it's I didn't appreciate it, you know, when I first saw the show, like which I think makes me like it a little bit more, you know, but it's so well choreographed how they fly and they land and the sound design there, the way everything comes together. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a pair of khakis flying through the, you know, this beautiful desert blue sky. I don't know, man. It's a great.
And the way they're parachuting too, like it's just perfectly mm-hmm. filled with wind just socks. Billowing. Just, yeah.
Whose pants are they? I don't know, but there they are, and then there's this RV like tearing down the road. So yeah, it's there are so many good ones. I mean, I think we could probably do episodes just on some of these shots because they never skimped on the visual storytelling aspect of TV. So guys, I want to thank you for joining me today. Did you have anything else that you wanted to mention about this legacy of Breaking Bad?
Every time I think about the show, it makes me want to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Like just going over in my head all these great moments. I'm really itching now to go back and watch it. I'm doing a Deep Space Nine rewatch right now though, so I have a long way to go.
Yeah.
But maybe in the next year or so.
Yeah, I mean, I'll forever be grateful to Vince Gilligan and company for creating this show because it changed the course of my life. Like, you know, not only did it, you know, open up a whole world of TV to me, which, you know, has not been great for my fitness levels, but it's been great for my intellectual gratification and my entertainment. But like it also just, yeah, like I used to sit in a cubicle banging out code and writing SQL scripts. And now I watch television and movies and talking to a microphone. And I wouldn't be doing that. I have no doubt I wouldn't be doing that had it not been for Breaking Bad. So it's like it's always bound up in like a life changing experience for me.
Yeah, I would have never been watching TV as intently as I was. That's without a doubt. So yeah, yours is a direct like cause and effect. Mine is a little bit more down the road, but I don't feel like there's if I needed something to get into whenever I first watched the first two seasons, and if I had done something different, it's very possible that I would not be here talking to you guys today. So it's pretty wild to think about it. And like I said, I hope you guys will come back and, you know, join for some of the episode recaps. One thing of that Jim, you just said that you wanted to rewatch. Anytime you want to rewatch and one of your favorite episodes,
dude,
I am
down.
You're welcome.
I'm down any episode. Like I said, I was rewatch it in isolation. I will be ready. I was kind of like when I was like, oh, because I thought we were going to do an episode with you, and I'm like, oh, this is retrospect. Oh, that's cool too. But yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tap me in for at least an episode of season, if that one.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. And that was my plan. I'm just glad to hear that you guys are on board for it too.
Yeah.
All right. So, is there anything you want to talk about that you guys are doing before we go? Any plugs for upcoming stuff?
Do you want to do it or me?
I believe right now we're recording this in advance. A little behind the scenes, but I believe right now we're going to be covering Mandalorian, Yellow Jackets, maybe coming up here in a bit.
Yeah,
I think we'll probably be either finishing up or done with The Last of Us. It's only a few more episodes.
Yeah,
than that, but
by the time this comes out, you'll probably be wrapping up on that one.
Yeah, and then we do weekly movies and first run movies and retro movies, things like that too.
Yeah, that sounds like what
Star Trek Picard. I'm sure people are deeply interested in that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be doing Yellow Jackets. I've been kind of waist deep in that the last few days.
Oh, well, we got to get together on that too.
Yeah.
I will trade you an episode of Breaking Bad for an episode of Yellow Jackets. Cause this guy's going on spring break.
Ah, okay.
With his kid.
Ah, right.
So
right.
I am going to need somebody to fill in there.
Are you in The Foundation at all on Apple TV Plus? Because that's another one coming back this year that we're pretty excited
about. Yeah, yeah. I'm a Foundation lore guy. I read all those books.
Nice, me too. It's been a long time. I read those back in high school. Jim read the first one last year, so we had a little bit of like hazy memory versus not so. But yeah, that's a fun one. I'm looking forward to come back to.
All right, well, people can find you guys, obviously, on baldmove.com. You can find Growth Decay Transformation, our weekly episodes, on baldmove.com as well. And you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me and Courtney on Twitter at BreakingBadGDT. That's GDT as in Growth Decay Transformation. And you can send us feedback at BreakingBadGDT@gmail.com. That's going to do it for today. Once again, thank you, Jim and Aaron, for coming in, and we'll have you back again soon.
Yeah, no problem.
Looking forward to it.
And that's a wrap. Thanks.